You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I mean, what are we doing here?
I think he's the philosopher of football.
It's great that everyone can give their opinion.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Find me. Find me. I don't care anymore. So drain my bank account.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS Studios in Midtown Manhattan. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Susanna Collins. It's a Thursday. We love Thursdays. David Goss, you're always here. I appreciate that. And Bobby Warshaw.
I'm going to leave then.
Are you?
Yeah, because if I'm not here, then you'll have to appreciate when I am here.
Well, I always appreciate both of them. Don't leave. Don't leave.
Guys.
By the way, great show coming up for you. Not only am I wearing my FC Wichita scarf, season his ticket holder, baby. The season has begun in Wichita, MPSL. But great show here. Atletico Madrid, little different, still blue and red colors. Going to play the MLS All-Stars on July 31st in Orlando. We'll talk about that. MLS midweek, the Union are top of the East. It was Montreal on Monday. Now it's the Union. Meanwhile, there's an epidemic of coaches saying that their squads are not good enough. Alan Koch is the latest of FC Cincinnati. Have that to talk about. Anthony Hudson said that. We talked about it. And then he got fired. He is no longer the head coach of the Raptors.
Andrew, be honest with the people.
Yeah,
when this show ends, the first thing you say to producer Anders is, I need more talent. You go out there every single week and you say, if I had Daryl Grove, if I had Christian Polanco, we would be top of the charts. So don't act like...
I'm pretty sure Anders is the one who does that.
Yeah.
I think Anders is throwing him under the bus.
Yeah, too. The key is that we don't say it publicly. That's how you maintain the semblance of chemistry. And that way you guys don't walk off the set when I intro it and I give you your compliments. You're not like secretly thinking, but I know what you said in the media. You said I wasn't good enough. Anyway, GM Porg Smith of the Rapids will join us to give us a little insight on what's going on, who the next head coach might be, what this all means, how it goes into the Rapids way, which is the plan you remember from that Denver Post op-ed from, I don't know, almost 2 years ago now. We got the Week 10 preview. Cameron Wiebe, future star, maybe, mayhaps. He's going to a game. So I need some advice. And then, of course,
star podcaster or star player?
Ooh. I'm dreaming for bigger things for him.
So most likely podcaster.
Gotcha. And then Roldan, ridiculousness, can't even say it. I didn't think they would win this appeal. They did. He's back. Bigger news, though, U.S. women. World Cup team is out. The World Cup is this summer. It is in France. It is going to take over the soccer world, and I cannot wait. We'll talk about that more in the future as things continue to take shape. But bigger news in at least this world right now, because we are all inflicted. Three of the four are inflicted with CCL fever. I know, Suze, I know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Monterrey,
you
champions.
Are missing out.
Yes.
I feel bad for you.
I am happy with my life and getting good sleep at night. And I'm
didn't experience
I'm content, guys.
Like 65,000 people trying to jump out of the stands onto the field.
Well, I watched the Game of Thrones episode last week, so that was enough excitement for me. So, yeah,
so
I'm good.
It's
been
I'm
a long
good.
Week.
Are you saying Tigres fans are kind of like whites or no?
I don't.
Sorry.
I would try and stretch
walk
for you.
That one back, yeah.
But I couldn't really get there.
You know, Game of Thrones jokes are not my forte, apparently.
As everyone knows, Tigres and Monterrey are both located in Monterrey, the same city. The fan bases hate each other. The teams hate each other. They've now faced off in like three finals in the last 5 years. Monterrey beat them at home by one goal in the CCL final, and it was epic. And that's all I have to say.
Pierre Gignac.
I'm happy
for
you.
Yeah, he scored an unreal goal, but the best moment of the game was Tuca Ferretti yelling at his fully professional, highly paid squad on the bench like they were five-year-old kids because someone tried to run at the Monterrey bench while beers are flying down around him. It was chaos to its extent, and then Monterrey wins it, and their coach runs down to the end line and starts clo-passing, and it's like everyone's into it, everyone's freaking out, and that's the point of CCL fever. It's insanity.
Yep.
None of it makes sense. From an MLS
insanity.
Point of view and everything.
I have
you
enough.
Don't need it?
I got enough. Plenty. People, plenty on my plate.
You live in Lower Manhattan. There are people walking down the street clo-passing
all
the
time.
Y'all
don't even know what's happening outside my front door.
Yeah,
so,
I don't think I
want to
know.
Exactly. I got to keep
Ferretti
that stuff at bay.
Tuca Ferretti would not approve. I can definitely say that. All right. Let's talk Atletico Madrid, and then we'll get to the weekend that will be.
Oh, speaking of legendary managers.
Diego Simeone, I found out, is the highest paid manager in the world, which I had no idea.
Yeah, because
you looked it up. $24 million.
Worth every penny.
Whoa.
Underpaid.
What do you even do with that amount of money? What do you do?
anything.
I'd like to try.
Buy stuff.
Buy all like, black clothing.
At some point, don't you just like run out?
Just yeah. Like, you're so rich that you don't even need to add color
think,
to your.
I wish I was wearing this shirt right now. I'm jealous of Bobby. Think about how much he spends on perfectly tailored black button down suits.
How much do you think, honestly?
Probably each one has to be $10,000. Easy.
I would say more. I would think even more.
The only thing with him
that
is...
That tells you where we're coming from. We're a little too salt to the earth here at Extra Time. Bobby
the only thing
like
is he's got to be careful because he could rip them because he is very active on the sideline.
So I am so hopeful that he's going to bring that same intensity and, of course, Atletico Madrid, known for that sort of intensity, to the All-Star Game. July 31st, it's a Wednesday, it's in Orlando, it's presented by Target, the 2019 MLS All-Star Game, as I said, presented by Target. We'll get to this more in depth later. I put out my All-Star 11 that I think could beat them on MLSsoccer.com. You can go see it there. We'll run through it now. I want to know if there are quibbles, and I'm looking directly at you, Bobby, half-pipe Simeone, in your black button-up over there. I have Nani at left wing, Ibrahimovic up top, Vela on the right. Ibra and Vela, I think, fill themselves in. Nani throwing the home fans a bone there.
This team is terrible.
What?
This team would give up 19 goals.
Well, it's an exhibition. It's about entertainment value, man.
You said which team would beat.
Yeah, but come on. We're not going in there and playing, like, double bunker, park two buses. Like, we want to entertain and win.
You have Blake Smith and Mentaner as your fullback.
Yeah, we're getting forward, baby.
Yeah,
all action.
So you're playing a 2-4-4.
Up and down. Ziegler and Zimmerman are going to find a way, and Stefan Frangoul is going to cover up everything. And meanwhile, the engine room, the midfield, is just beautiful.
I like that midfield.
Alejandro Pozuelo,
that's
Nico Lodero, Jonathan Dos Santos. They all got a little bit of quality or a lot of quality in the final third. They all can cover ground. Nico works hard. I think this is, yes, probably a team that tactically has some weaknesses, Dave, but I'm sticking by it. I've already put it out publicly. I can't walk it back. This is it.
I just have one question to ask or one point to make about it. What minute exactly is El Seno coming in? Because that's going to make the difference.
Gotcha. Not sure I agree on that one, but probably 55th if
you know,
I'm going to put him in a number.
You couldn't play for Diego Simeone?
Who? El Seno. Probably not. Let us know what you think. Atletico Madrid in this game, 401-206-0-MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Who should be on the team? Who are you going to vote
for? I hope Simeone knows when he comes, if he asks me to do anything, I would do it. Like if he came up behind me and he was like, Andrew has to go.
What if he wanted to scratch your back?
No, it's not. That's uncomfortable.
Well,
but he wouldn't do it like that. He would do it like that.
Yeah, it would be more of a physical back scratch. It would almost be
best
like,
manager in the world.
He might wound you, actually, if he did that. All right, let's talk midweek. Enough Simeone. Union, 17 points. That's top of the Eastern Conference, tied with Montreal and DC. On Monday, we said Montreal were big winners. So, logically, I think we probably got to say the Union are big winners here, too. The flip side of that is that Cincinnati lost, and they continue to lose, and Alan Koch kind of buried his squad afterwards. He did it not more tactfully, let's say, than did Anthony Hudson. I want to start with the positive, though, Bobby. I know everyone knows, by the name of El Seno, you... Have you invested yourself in the Union in some way, whether not necessarily in their success, but you're connected spiritually? What's going on?
I'm spiritually connected to teams that play good, attractive soccer, which the Union do. And there is a question this year. I want to put this first place performance into context. This isn't just the Philadelphia Union in first place. This is the Philadelphia Union in first place in a year that was supposed to be a bum for them, or just a lost year as they transition. Obviously, they wouldn't acknowledge that. They weren't going into the year saying, oh yeah, we're fine being 7th, 8th, 9th as we transition to this new era of Philadelphia Union soccer. But any logic suggested that it should have been, because A, it takes time to learn a new system, but B, very few players in the old system fit the new system. By almost any measurement, this should have been a rough year for the Union, yet here they are in first place, a team that looks solid offensively, that looks organized defensively, and almost any way you put it, they are dangerous and well put together.
I love this so much because, number one, I love Jim Curtin. He is such a nice human being. But when we let's look at what happened this week, right, with Anthony Hudson, with guys like Alan Koch, basically kind of throwing their teams and players under the bus. Jim Curtin is a guy who the last like three seasons at various points, people have been like, he's on the hot seat. He's got to turn this Union team around. Not once, not one time did he ever throw his players under the bus or make statements, he is a guy that will keep it in the locker room. He has his team's back. And now it's paying so many dividends right now. They're playing really, really well. And I love the fact that he has gone through some tumultuous times with his team. It hasn't always been smooth sailing. And yet here they are playing some of the best soccer that they've played. It's like it's perseverance. It's a really good story. And I think it's good to highlight this considering the temperature that we're in right now with coaches and kind of what we've seen this week.
I think it's a great point. Also, he was a guy and kind of like Anthony Hudson in that sense, that got a job early when he was quite young, maybe didn't have the experience that some might say would immediately translate to MLS success. And it didn't always. But you're right. He found a way to stick around. He found a way to improve as a coach. He found a way to get something out of the squad. Now, let's not paper over some of the cracks. There have been some bad seasons in Philly over the last couple of years. But generally, you would say, under multiple general managers now, the trajectory has been up. And they've chosen, at least in a year since, in this sense, with Ernst Tanner, for Jim to be that guy. On the flip side, year one for Cincinnati, things were going really well, and you don't have to bring up the march anymore, Dave. I get it.
I'm sold. Ian Wiebe are sold.
One goal in six games, barely getting just any shots on goal at this point. They put out a team on Wednesday night that lost 2-0 to the Union. Afterwards, Alan Koch had this to say. Luke, that's Luke Sassano, and his staff are trying to find additional players. We've only had one window as a club. We have another window coming up where we need to find additional players to improve the group. I think we're very aware of it. It's a project. You can't play a group like Philly tonight, and they've got quality players. They, of course, lost. He basically said, we've got a group. We're maximizing that group.
False. That part's not true. I think everything that we just said about Jim Curtin and Philly and all the things that have gone right because of the way he's handled things, because of what he's been able to do with maybe not the best talent in the league all the time, but in terms of giving the group confidence, having a belief, a style in which everyone's going in the same direction, none of those things feel true about the other side, and the results speak for themselves. Philly has beaten FC Cincinnati twice in the last 3 weeks. One group has all of these things that Susanna just mentioned going for them. The other group, we don't see those same qualities. So we've talked about it on this show before, and nothing's changed.
So I want to, like, as I saw these comments, and look, we all kind of sat here at this desk, and people out in the, you know, the general media sphere and Twitter and everybody else said, ooh, I don't know, maybe this team doesn't have the talent to compete. And there was that, I don't want to call it a mirage, because they earned those results early in the season, but there hasn't been a sustainability of that. But I think back to preseason, we were talking about like 3-4-3s with them, right? And then they switched it up again. And I remember sitting in a room in, and I can't even remember what city we were in for the combine.
Orlando.
Yeah, with
Orlando.
Uh-huh. And talking to Alan Koch, and we were talking about how do you build an expansion team? How do you build a team that can compete? And he talked about culture and trust and work ethic that entire time. And so then it feels weird to me to then at this point to say something like this, which in my mind at least, and these are just the way I think about work, the way I think about work environments, that undercuts your culture a little bit. That says to the guys there that you need to pull in the same direction, like, hey, you're not, you know, we're all trying really hard here, but I don't think we're not good enough and you're not good enough. Like that seems strange to me. It just seems strange to me. I don't even know how to say it in any other more. Yeah, that's. Yeah.
I want to dig into the talent issue because I find it so funny that after the fact, after a team's success, we look at their squad and say, oh yeah, of course they're winning. They have talent. But before the year, everyone was saying they don't have enough talent. And this Union team, to me, is the perfect example of that. If you were to go in preseason 2019 or maybe preseason 2018 and pick between FC Cincinnati's roster and the lineup that Philadelphia played last night, I mean, who was Austin Trusty? Who was Mark McKenzie? Who was Jack Elliott? Ray Gaddis was probably in the life support of his career. Who was Kasper Pizbelko in FIFA? Like, why? It's easy after the fact, after a team wins, to say, oh yeah, their players are good, their players are talented. But that was because of the work of the coach and the organization and the system. But to me, if you look at the Cincinnati lineup, you can't say before they played games, that this wasn't as talented a group as Montreal and Philadelphia. And heck, I might even throw FC Dallas into that category.
The Montreal one, so, Piatti's a difference maker. There's not a difference maker
but
that.
But they're
here.
Winning without him. What's their record lately without Piatti?
It's fair. They're sitting at the top of the Eastern Conference as well.
And you can make an argument that Montreal has no chance in the playoffs without Piatti, and that's perfectly fine. But they're probably going to get to the playoffs without Piatti, and at that point, you give yourself a chance. And it seems to me that most teams in the league should say, let's get to the playoffs and then hope we can figure it out in that one game.
I argued with Bobby a lot today about this, and in sitting here, I actually don't fully disagree with you because I do think that there's enough on this roster. Now, the issues are a few things. One,
Hold on. Just to clarify, enough to what? To compete?
To compete in Major League Soccer. The issues are a few. One is
specifically,
hey, hang
on. Compete is make the playoffs.
Yes.
Let's qualify that. To compete is to make the playoffs.
Yes, to be in the conversation, to be close to that seventh spot. If you're eighth, it is what it is. A few things. One is, you mentioned Philly and FC Dallas. Those are both organizations that have had years to develop and work with a lot of the guys who are being difference makers. So you could say on the surface that Duplain and Greg Garza are better than, you know, Matt Real and Reggie Cannon and all those guys. But there is a difference between having those guys around for years and years. And so when they step into the team, Philly's more cohesive because they didn't just show up off a plane and meet everyone. They learned how to play soccer through these clubs and a lot of times through these two coaches.
But
so that's something that we're not giving FC Cincinnati enough credit.
But doesn't that go back to preseason?
No. It's not fair. FC Cincinnati found out they'd be an MLS team.
I know that it's not an equivalent.
Less than a year ago, they found out they'd be an MLS team, right? It's not fair to say that they should be a cohesive club top to bottom with how many academy kids are in the two teams that we mentioned in Dallas and Philly, how many players have played together. Ray Gattis has been there for years. So all of that's not fair to say against FC Cincinnati. But the other issue with FC Cincinnati is that they have used a lot of their assets that they get as an expansion team incorrectly, it seems like, on these players. So yes, maybe this talent is good enough to compete, but they wasted allocation money and they wasted spots in expansion drafts, in super drafts, things like that, on some of these guys that lower their ceiling on the ability to make the squad even better.
I think it's so risky though when a coach like calls into question the talent of his team, because some guys might rise to the occasion for that. Some guys might be like, see it as a challenge, like, oh yeah, I'm gonna prove to you that I'm talented. That might not be the case for all the players on the team. It might create a really hideous environment. It might create incredible lack of confidence issues. And I just think that it's so early for Cincinnati. It's so early for Alan Koch to say something like this. And as you mentioned, Wiebe, like, disrupt that culture that he's trying to establish there. And I just think it's a little bit foolish and it's very risky.
Very risky. That's a good way of putting it. I was like, it's strange, but you nailed it on the head. That was the word I was looking for. It could backfire. It really could. And it backfired for Anthony Hudson. You remember Monday, if you listen to this show, if you pay attention to Major League Soccer, Anthony Hudson with the Rapids sans win in 9 games, basically saying, he had a bottom of the standings team and it was a bottom team. And we were just kind of flabbergasted. Well, the Anthony Hudson era in Colorado is over. He was hired in late November 2017. He did not make it a full year and a half. He had an 8-26-9 record, a negative 39 goal differential, and a little more than a year at the helm of the Rapids. This year, 0 wins, 2 points from 9 games, 0.22 points per game. That is way, 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 way at the bottom of MLS right now. They've given up, of course, 24 goals in those 9 games. That's more than 2.5 per game. Not going to win like that on track for 90. That would be, of course, an MLS record. You figure that things will come back down to earth, you figure, and that won't actually happen. You'll also remember Toronto FC in the 2018 CONCACAF Champions League. We talked about that a lot on this show. Quote, this is preseason for us. I mean, another instance where it was maybe just words.
Forgot about that.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
And then they also got upset by Nashville in the Open Cup last year. So that was their one game in the Open Cup. They didn't make any progress in that one.
About that, too.
He's out. He's out, and I don't think it should surprise anybody. Just like, you know, Alan Koch was much more diplomatic in what he said. I think I could not see a scenario in which Anthony Hudson could go back in that locker room with the veterans of the likes of Kai Kamara and Benny Failhaber and Jack Price and many others who seem to be very forward-facing, let's say, with their personalities and opinions. Porg Smith made the decision. He's the EVP and GM. He said, it's over. I hired you, but the time is up. He's been there since January 2015. He's been the interim GM since August 2017, and he's had his current role since January 2018. He is on the line now for our AT&T call to the field. Porg Smith, the GM of the Colorado Rapids. Porg, how's it going?
Good, Andrew, and you?
It's going pretty well. We got to talk about the news of the day, though, obviously. Anthony Hudson, about a year and a half as the head coach of your Major League Soccer team. Why didn't it work out here? I remember it was a worldwide search. He was the man. What happened?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to go back and, you know, it's obviously something we've done to try and see, okay, where were the mistakes made and kind of what led us to this situation. I think in hindsight, we probably underestimated the transition for Coach Hudson, not just in terms of somebody coming from outside MLS, but also somebody coming from international football into the club game. They're obviously very different. This league is an interesting league. There's lots of idiosyncrasies, whether it's the climate, the travel, you know, all of these things that go with it. So it does take a period to adjust. I think the international football element of it as well, you go from intense short periods with a smaller group of players to you know, having these players day in and day out and having to make more player personnel decisions, really, because ultimately as an international coach, you're limited. You don't have that kind of transfer element to it. And I think, you know, they were some of the key learnings that I think we took from it. But ultimately, this is about results. I think if you look at, you know, the coach and where we've gone, we haven't made the progress that we wanted or that we felt was warranted given the roster that we put together this year. And we felt that's such a pivotal time for the club that the change had to be made.
Porig, bottom of the table with a bottom team. Those were Anthony Hudson's exact words. Were they accurate?
No. In my mind, and look, I said this to players when I addressed them yesterday, this is not an 0-7-2 roster. You know, I'm genuinely proud of the players we have in that locker room. You know, obviously, you know, we've made no secret of the fact that the 2020 is going to be a big year for us. But the expectations coming into this year were certainly to be playoff competitive. And I think, look, even if you look at your own show and you guys, there was plenty of chatter in the off season about this being a team that would be right around the edge of that. You know,
you're telling me, Porik, you're telling me, man.
We wouldn't quite make it and that it was a year too early. But there was plenty of chatter about the improvements that had been made over the course of the offseason and the fact that we could be competitive this year and could look to fight our way into those kind of couple of bottom playoff spots. I looked around that locker room and, you know, nobody can tell me that the likes of Howard, Kamara, Benny, you know, Acosta, Rosenberg, Rubio, Price, they're not bottom level players. They're really not. And, you know, we're very excited about some of the younger guys coming through. I think Cole Bassett, Seb Anderson and Sam Vines have already established themselves as being up and coming players in this league. So there's no doubt in my mind that this isn't a bottom level team. We are continuing to build and to continue to move towards 2020 when, you know, the significant financial flexibility comes in from the way we've structured things. But I feel like this was a team that's significantly better than 0-7-2 and should be battling for those final playoff spots.
So, Porg, there is an emotional aspect of this. And we talked about it on the show. Any sort of walk of life that you have, if your quote-unquote boss is kind of come out and saying that, like, basically you're not good enough, that's troublesome and it's difficult to get past. What is the emotional element within the club right now? How is everyone sort of dealing with what's happening between yourself, the players, front office, supporters? What's your finger on the pulse there?
To be honest, Andrew, this might surprise people, but spirits are actually quite high. One of the things that we do at this club is we're incredibly transparent with our staff right the way up. We talk about one club as being a mantra, and it's something that truly means something here. So, I mean, yesterday went in, not just addressed the players, but also addressed the entire staff here. And everybody can reiterate what our plan is. Everybody knows what our vision is. And everybody understands that there's stumbling blocks along the way on any kind of movement towards a goal. So we've got a plan, but that doesn't mean that you don't take a look at it, examine what's going on, and course correct when needed. And I think we explained that. We went through it in detail yesterday. You know, people understand it. People are still committed to the process. They're committed to what we're trying to achieve here. They know it's not a short-term fix, but they also know that we should be showing progress. So it's a hugely encouraging thing for us to see the commitment that our staff have and the desire that our staff have to continue to work hard and drive us forward towards our goal.
Porig, you know the job, you know the pressure. How much responsibility do you take for what's gone on, and why do fans, should they trust that you can get this club moving forward?
Yeah, of course I take responsibility. I mean, any leader who doesn't look at their own accountability isn't doing their job right. I think the key thing here, though, is to accept that we all make mistakes and don't double down on the mistake. Learn from it. You know, make the changes that are necessary, you know, and don't make the same mistake again. As I've said, our plan is still strong. You know, we know what we're doing. We know how we're driving towards 2020 and beyond. I think we have a good foundation of players. We did bring in some more experienced guys to kind of, you know, move us forward and help us be competitive this year in Kai Kamara and Benny Failhaber. But if you look at the foundational pieces, the likes of Kellen Acosta, who's 24, Keegan Rosenbury, Diego Rubio in their mid-20s, and then you look at some of the young players coming up, the Cole Bassetts, the Seb Andersons, the Sam Vines, there is a good nucleus of domestic players who know this league, who know what it takes to win in this league, and who are signed for the medium to long term. And that's something that, that we've done, you know, we've taken a very calculated approach to that. And, you know, there is pain along the way, and that's something that we've got to look at. But we've been very, very clear about how we're going to go and build this and not denying ourselves the flexibility that we feel is needed when these contracts come off the books. Because don't forget, it's not just the DPs. There are also some TAM-level contracts that come off next year as well. So everything has been geared towards providing maximum flexibility for 2020, but that doesn't excuse what's going on now. It doesn't excuse that. We should be playoff competitive. We should be better than 0-7-2, and that's why we need to course correct and make the move. So the key thing for me is to really, you know, self-analyze, look at where the mistakes have been made, correct from that, get the right coach in now, and move forward.
Thank you for coming on the show and answering these questions. Not everyone answers the call when Weeby sends it out to try and get them to take these. So thank you very much for that. You talked about looking forward to 2020. Connor Casey is taking over as the interim. When does the coaching search start, and what will that process look like?
Well, I think ironically, we actually have a very large database of coaches that was based off our previous process. That's a foundational piece. But ultimately, you know, some very, very good candidates are out there on the market right now. We've had a huge number of applications already from yesterday and overnight. We do have our own ideas. You know, we certainly do. And we're going to take the time. We're going to get it right. We're going to learn from those past mistakes and make sure that they're not made again. And we're going to put ourselves in a position to hire the right person for the job, someone who's committed to the vision that we have and someone who can go and drive us forward on the field.
So you mentioned there, Porig, in kind of evaluating Anthony Hudson's time, that maybe he wasn't ready for this step, whether it be a day-to-day of a club and the transfer policy aspect of it, or Major League Soccer in itself. If I read between the lines there, does that mean that you are looking for someone with MLS experience, or is that not required?
You know, I think it's really important when you examine these things that you look at what brings success. You know, so we have an analysis done on all clubs, on all coaches that have come into MLS, where they've come from, what their past experiences were. Have they been assistant coaches in MLS? Have they been head coaches in MLS? Have they come in completely raw from abroad? You know, what are those backgrounds that have proven to be successful? But crucially, you've also got to look at what we're doing here as a club. So we're a club that's moving forward with what I would call is a youth-centric movement, where we do want to bring in players that are you know, on the younger end of the scale, players that can develop, players that can play here, succeed here, and then potentially be moved on, you know, into Europe, and we create a cycle, a virtuous cycle that works for our club. So you need to find the person who's going to match that, the person who can ultimately educate these players, teach them, and help them to become the best versions of themselves. So I think that's really important, that you find the right balance. It's impossible to get it right. I mean, it's difficult enough anyway, but it's impossible to get it right if you don't know what you're doing. And that's why I would say that the most important thing is evaluating the plan, making sure we understand where mistakes were made, not making those mistakes again, and finding the right person. You know, I do think having MLS experience and knowledge of the league is important, but is it the only key thing? It's not. And I think that's something that we have to take into account as well. But it is crucial. There's no doubt. It's very important.
Last one here for you, Porg. We'll let you get back to the search. I'm sure you have a lot to do here. You talk about 2020. Tim Howard, Shekel Zengashi, who's not with the team anymore, those will come off. You mentioned the TAM contracts. How much do you think that there's a spin that's going to happen here? Are there any limitations on what's available to you? We see this league sort of the gamut of investment from Atlanta United on down. Where do you think the Rapids might fall?
We're excited about what 2020 is going to bring. I mean, obviously, we've got scouts out in the field at the moment, you know, doing the work on that. We've identified a number of players that we think are going to be difference makers in our group and difference makers in the league. So we're excited to see some of these deals unfold over the next couple of months. There's no doubt we've got some areas we need to become more athletic on the back line. You know, we've still got a couple of days even in this transfer window to see if we can fix that. But moving into the future, we certainly need to bring in that high-quality number 10 that I think this club has been searching for a long, long time, and they haven't been able to get it right. So we need to get that right. We need to bring that player in. We need to make sure that we've got good balance, we've got good athleticism across the field, players that know how to win, exciting players that are going to help our fans enjoy the game, and players that are going to bring us to our ultimate goal, which is to be a perennial playoff team.
All right. 25 more games in 2019. Big decisions to make for Porg Smith and the Rapids. A head coach, perhaps signings in the future. Porg, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure we'll be in touch soon.
Thanks, everyone. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
All right. There are Porg Smith's words on the matter at hand. He has another hire to make. They've got some issues to handle on the back line. He said they want to get more athletic there. The transfer window has not yet closed. Matt Doyle, the armchair analyst, has a very good piece on MLSsoccer.com talking about potential moves. Let's dig in. What do you think? What'd you make of it?
I think he said a lot of the right things, which I would want to hear, which is I made mistakes. Mistakes can't be repeated and you have to move on from them. And it was clear, which we don't often get, which was Anthony Hudson coming from an international job, coming from outside of Major League Soccer. My one question would be, he said, one of the things that you don't do as a national team coach, which you do with clubs, is transfers and player movement. But that can't be just him. So we don't know which of these players falls on him, which of these players falls on Porg in the front office. And then how much responsibility they gave to a manager who had never worked in this league before and hadn't had to do this in 4 or 5 years, because remember, he was with Bahrain before he was with New Zealand. So that hadn't been really in his profile for a while. So if I'm a fan of the Rapids, that's what I'm looking at and saying, I'm hearing a lot of good things. And we all know from working in this league and talking that the youth movement he's talking about is real. They're really pushing this. It's something they believe in, the players coming through their academy. They believe in the future of Major League Soccer being in, having young players who you can grow and develop in your team. And I think the coach next hire will reflect that, which I would be excited about as a fan. But there has to be question marks, because the coach isn't the only person that built this team. And we talked about FC Cincinnati and the talent being there. So I think there is a lot of talent in this Rapids team, and it's better than what it's been. But there are still question marks around a lot of the transfers that have occurred over the last 4 or 5 years.
Absolutely. They get out from underneath these DPs, but we kind of poked at it. Like, what happens then? They talk a lot about their plan. The Rapids way really laid that plan out, and the way that they want to play, and the disconnect that they felt between the front office and the performance on the field. That disconnect has to be closed here. Like, you had the hire with Anthony Hudson, he didn't even make it a year and a half. This next hire is extremely important. It's also extremely important, by the way, not to let this season just fly away. Yeah, you don't have a win yet,
but you got to have
some sort of faith from your players, from your fans, well, from your organization. Like, you got to get, there have to be some results.
There's no positive that's occurred, but the way this ended actually gives them a clean sigh of relief.
It's a rallying point.
And I mean, the easiest example, man, you over here, is Mourinho getting fired, and just the sheer joy of playing for someone else and playing in a different atmosphere afterwards allows soccer players to play better. So I think the way it ended was poor and negative for the club, but it probably helps you rally this group by saying, we picked you. We do believe in you. If he didn't, we do. And now you get a new situation. You get to work for the con man.
And look, there's 25 games left. There's 25 games. Yeah. DC United, like, had what they have midseason last year. I'm not saying Wayne Rooney's coming.
Yeah.
By no means am I saying that. The Western Conference is better than the East, but there is an additional playoff spot this year than there hasn't been before. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe you can make a run. You two believed. You two believed preseason.
Yeah. There's quality on this team. Who knows if there's enough quality to make up for the lack of a center back? I mean, that's real. I mean, and Porg Smith deserves responsibility for that part. He made a lot of signings. He didn't sign a center back. You can't win in this league or any league without a center back.
Well, they signed 2 TAM center backs. Neither of them worked.
2 years
one,
ago.
Yeah, for sure. But
right. For sure.
Yeah. One of them on the certainly the one. I mean, Tommy Smith has to be a Hudson guy. He's with him in New Zealand, all that. Danny Wilson, TBD, but
the quick point I wanted to make is I would like to see this team try to play the way that Liverpool started the game against Barcelona. In that diamond, Manchester United's done it points throughout the year. It's the way Belgium played against Japan or Brazil in the World Cup, where you play the diamond, but you split the strikers. You have Kai Kamara on the right, almost like a winger, Diego Rubio on the left, play Kellen Acosta as like your center striker dash tip of the diamond, where you play a 4-4-2, but you split the strikers even wider than what the Union do. And I think they have the players for that. Maybe they don't have the center back, but they have the personnel, and I'd be interested to see how they do with that system.
I know that they're turning over all the rocks within Major League Soccer, outside, trying to find that center back, because Courtney Ford won't be back for a little while, and what they have clearly isn't working right now. But maybe Connor Casey, a new voice, will help him out here. Let's talk MLS Week 10. Red Bulls, Galaxy, Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern,
ESPN. Can we just throw this, because Bobby put out a good tweet. Let us know who you think should be in the conversation to be that next manager. Because, as Bobby pointed out, a lot of the obvious names like Mark Dos Santos, James O'Connor have been hired.
Giovanni Savarese a couple years ago. The one that you were like, it was like Caleb Porter before, where it was like, somebody's going to hire this guy. Just,
also,
when is it going to be?
Also, Caleb Porter just got hired. So, like, a lot of the names have kind of disappeared that were the clear ones for a while. So who do you, as fans out there, think of if your club's looking at someone or potentially moving? Who do you think of as the future?
Can we take bets here? Can we just put a little skin on the line? So Taylor Twellman reported that Josh Wolf is probably the front runner. And Taylor knows things, right? So if he's the front runner, Robin Fraser is up. I think Ty Ramos gets the job. Current U20 coach, he's done. He's won with the team. I don't know where else to put it. I don't love the soccer they play. He has experience with young players. So Ty Ramos, to me, is the second front runner after Josh Wolf.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Let's talk MLS Week 10. Let us know who you think. 4-1-2-0-6-0 MLS.
I want you guys to say name.
I don't have a name. So Tab would have been.
I think Tab is a good one based on what he's saying about the youth side of it and the combination. And also the fact that it kind of looks like this is maybe the last hurrah for Tab within U.S. soccer with the U-20s. You go to the World Cup and they've had a changing of the guard at the top as far as the management goes. Mm-hmm. Maybe they want to bring in their own guy on the U-20 side.
So two I would be interesting in. Chris Leach, because of what he did with San Jose and maybe the way it works now with Almeida, because I thought he played good soccer with young players. And Steve Ralston, who didn't get a shot there. I would be surprised if Josh Wolf, after everything he's been through with Berhalter, left in year one of being the national team, part of the national team where he's played. I understand a head coaching job is different than an assistant, but I'd be surprised if he left for that.
I look at USL maybe a Hackworth type too. I know that it would feel a little bit like a recycle from Philadelphia, but he has a ton of experience with youth national teams, just won a title in USL with Louisville. So there's an option for you. Let us know what you think. Now we will finally get to Week 10, Red Bulls Galaxy, Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. I have 4 tickets in my possession for this game, Susanna. One of those tickets, I don't know, will they make them for 18-month-old? Does he have to have a ticket?
I've been told you don't maybe? If you're under 2.
Here's my biggest
Cameron's
question.
Cameron's coming.
My biggest question.
Why? Because you have 4 tickets, he wasn't going to get one?
No. Is Mindy coming?
Mindy is on the fence right now. I think she's hoping for rain.
Okay.
It's supposed to be the nicest day of the weekend.
No, but I'm concerned about the clear bag policy for you.
And didn't even think about that.
And all the supplies that come with, you know, the baby accoutrements.
Sure. I'm gonna have a stroller.
But it's not a big bag, and you gotta fit a lot of stuff.
Or you bring like 6 of them,
bag.
Right?
I don't know if that works. That's a very good question.
There
that might
a limit
be the loophole.
Of how many clear bags?
That could be the loophole. But I just want you
arms
to be
covered in clear bags.
I want you to be as prepared as possible, okay. Weeby, because you know it. The last thing you want is to get up to that security line and then they're like, ooh, no, sorry, you can't bring in that diaper.
Oh, my
bag.
God.
And
if I
like,
got to Red Bull Arena.
What? And Cam's
if
crying.
If I made the journey and I cannot, we will find, I will call somebody. Yeah. I'll be like, do you know who I am?
Hey, I just want to say, I'm going to go get some coffee. You let me know when the baby conversation is
You don't have any advice here. You don't have any help. Like,
Bobby.
Think about it. Be compassionate, Bobby.
I would say this, though. Based on what Susanna said, if there's one thing we know about Andrew and his child, it's that he's always big on preparation.
Yes, exactly. That's why I'm having this conversation right now. That's why I'm having this conversation.
I just can't wait for the Graham story.
So this means he's a Red Bull fan. That's out there.
He does have a Red Bull jersey.
His first game ever, this is who he is. TID.
Is that the way it works?
Probably, because what else are you saying? Like, what else is he connected to?
Well, I was assuming that I would let him choose when he was, you know, cognizant enough to make that choice.
I assume this is his choice.
I didn't get baptized as an infant. If we want to go real deep with this, props to my parents.
I didn't either.
And I will not quote unquote soccer baptize him before he's ready to make that choice for himself.
I like that. I think that's good parenting.
But he will be wearing a Red Bulls jersey just because I bought him one back in the day for like $10 was on sale. Anything that I need to, like, you know, let's just say, Bobby, I'm trying to develop a very, you know, well-rounded soccer supporter and potential player one day. What you as a developer of youth, what would you advise here? Do you have any advice, any feelings, any like just sort of core beliefs that
churros are big. Churros are good at sports games. Makes you want to go back.
I mean, he's 18 months, so I don't know that he's going to remember.
He's going to remember a
churro. He'll remember a churro.
Everyone remembers.
Big old smile on his face.
Hey?
What's his attention span?
We were definitely going to be doing a lot of walking around the arena.
Okay.
So if you see me and you see a young child with me, don't rush up on me because I might have to take you down, evaluate the threat. But come say hi. Come say hi. Cameron Wiebe likes to give high fives. Bobby, I don't think you have anything.
And that has been your analysis of New York Red Bulls versus the LA Galaxy.
Hey, it's going to be a great game. I love that he's going to be at this game because one of the first games that really got me like, hey, I'm all in. I'm completely invested in Major League Soccer was, as I've said many times on this show, Giant Stadium, Josie, JPA, Cletus, the Galaxy, Beckham, Pavone. It was awesome. It was great. What a great game that was. 9 goals, 5-4. I mean, I was hooked at that point. This is the game, though. You said to me, Bobby, in the meeting that the Red Bulls were waiting for. What does that mean?
Well, it feels like this is what they needed to get out of their slump. Because part of their slump is them not playing well. I think part of them was also just having the opponents that Red Bulls were always going to slump against this year. Teams who played direct, teams that didn't really interest them. But this is a team in the Galaxy who have been trying to play. And I think that they want to play. When you have Zlatan and Leggett and Dos Santos, you're a team that should want to have the ball. And those are the teams that Red Bulls do better against because they can actually press them and get havoc and second balls and all that. But it's also just a game that the players are going to get up for. And this is something that as the season goes on, yes, Chris Armas did things with the team that aren't working, but I think there's also a big element that new players on bigger contracts, players who want to leave, players who are a little older, there's a complacency, but to play Zlatan in front of the big crowd on national television will be good for these players and ultimately good for the team.
So if they don't get up for this game, if they fail this test, what does that mean for the Red Bulls?
Yeah. You buy your toddler another jersey.
make the real quick switch, huh? Well, we'll see. Maybe they're selling Zlatan jerseys at Red Bull Arena.
Dude, just get a Red Bulls 2 jersey. Yeah. Number one.
You know what? You get me a Red Bulls 2 jersey.
Let's be honest. Wally's boys, let's go.
Goss has some extra Etienne Jr. jerseys at home.
5-0. Birmingham Legion. What's up?
Dabgod Jr.? Yes. Dynamo, Dallas, got a rivalry match also on Saturday, so you can watch that Galaxy Red Bulls game. And then right afterwards, 4 p.m. Eastern, Univision and Twitter. That's in English there, the SAP, and it is free. Dynamo Dallas, Luchi Gonzalez. Honestly, when Porig was talking about the kind of manager that they were looking for, I was like, in my mind, I was like, Luchi. That's what I was thinking at the time.
So can we just put something out there? Dallas headhunted Luchi Gonzalez, brought him to their academy, and developed him. That didn't happen by accident. So for every club out there who's like, well, we don't have this great up-and-coming young coach who's ready to come in, that is on you. I would like to leave that there.
I like that. I like that. I appreciate that. I also appreciate the way they're treating Paxton Pomykal. He's hurt right now, but recovering. And they're going to sit him basically until the U-20 World Cup because they want him to go. They want him to be a part of that. I'll remind you that a guy, you know, Paul Pogba played in the U-20 World Cup when probably people thought that was way below him. Paxton Pomykal, American players, I'd like to see them all, if possible. I know there are complications with these MLS teams and fixtures, but would like to see the best team there as we can have. What is the state of the rivalry? That is a question for this match. What do you think, Susanna? State of this rivalry?
I love that they're both, because they're like neck and neck in the standings right now, which I think I feel like, and I'm probably wrong, but it feels like it's been a while since that has been the case. Yep. You know, I feel like Houston was maybe kind of like bottom dwellers for a while. So right now they're on even footing. And that, I think in any rivalry, that makes it more enticing and more exciting. And just the way the style of football that these teams play, I think is going to make for a really, really exciting derby. And I'm typically, like the last few years, I haven't gotten as jacked up for the Texas Derby. Are we calling it Derby? Can we do that?
El Capitan.
Yeah, El Capitan is what's at stake. Yeah. I almost want to call it El Capitan.
Yeah, it's a cool cannon. Isn't that what they call it? It's awesome.
Am I false? I don't know.
That. But shouldn't Bobby know this? He played in it.
I just want to say, I thought you'd be a derby girl.
Derby girl?
Yeah, I didn't think that you were a Derby person.
It's too many years following Premier League and Derby.
It's that Liverpool.
Yeah,
that Liverpool Everton back
and forth. I know. I roll.
To add to what Susanna said about the stature of the teams fighting for trophies, they have not, since Houston went back to the Western Conference, both made the playoffs in the same year. In 2017, when Houston made the run of the conference final, Dallas didn't make it that year. When Dallas
They were both good because remember Dallas fell off
Half of the year when they weren't.
But I'm just saying that was the only time, as Suzanne and you're saying, that they've both been good and met up. And I'm pretty sure Houston came back and beat Dallas. We were there and it started the Oscar Pareja, like it fell off a cliff and they couldn't find a way to get a result. But yes.
So can I ask you this? Because I asked you about the state of the rivalry.
Yeah.
But you add Austin. We don't know. We're not in the Lone Star State. What happens? Is it like a triangle then? Or is it like Dallas and Houston and Austin are the Black Hats?
I'm very interested in this because I wonder if Austin is going to kind of try to like muscle their way into this already established rivalry, and Houston and Dallas are just going to be like, you're cute. You know, like, yeah. Nah.
Keep it moving.
Exactly.
Keep it moving.
The flip side of that is culturally, I felt living in Dallas that there is more of a cultural adversary with Austin just in the way they go about their lives. That Houston and Dallas are similar cities, similar type of people, a little bit of a natural rivalry because everyone in Dallas wants to be the best, but culturally it felt like Austin was the opposite to those two.
I love that point.
Can I give you a primer on how this is going to go down, Weeby?
Sure.
I want you to go and look at every comment on any New York NYCFC rivalry thing, and look at the Red Bulls fans' comments, because that's what's about to happen. Is stop trying to force this rivalry on me. DC is my rival. Don't force this Major League Soccer, and it's always directed at you.
Somehow.
That's how this is going to go down. I guarantee
I am not Major League Soccer. I'm like Bart Simpson riding on a chalkboard for you right now. Sporting Kansas City, Atlanta, Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Pre- and post-game shows on MLS channels. That's MLS Match Day Central. Charlie Davies will be here with us. You got to tune into those and get your coverage on both sides. The post-game show is the full wrap from the weekend. That is always, in my opinion, the funnest thing that we do here in this studio. It is retro night. Sporting has their throwback whiz kits that they will be wearing.
I got one of those last year.
Oh, I thought you were going to say this year, and I felt...
I know. I'm a little heartbroken.
Yeah.
But they only warmed up in them last year, right?
Yeah.
They didn't actually play in them?
That's right. That's correct.
It is retro night. I think that's the case again this time around.
Oh.
I don't even know if they have 11 players to
wear.
They're
so cool, though. Right? Oh my gosh.
Do they even have enough players to like field a team here? Peter Vermees said they canceled training because they had like six guys. Gerso Fernandez, you saw him tumble into the goal. He broke his wrist on that. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. He had surgery on his left wrist. Jonel Cabucios with the 17s. Jimmy Madronda's been out for a minute. Eric Hurtado's out for a couple months. Jalen Lindsay's out 5 months. Rodney Wallace is out for basically the season. Roger Espinosa is out for 2-3 months. Matt Beisler is the only one who could be back within a month.
If Peter Vermees needs numbers for training, I think Bobby would love to jump into it.
I'm definitely a Vermees guy.
3-4 Rando.
I'm definitely
Rando.
Rando. I'm definitely a Vermees guy.
He would be a Rando. Like, who's this Rando? Yeah.
Vermees, come on. You know Vermees has enough people to run
just
a training.
Just listen to me, David. I'd always play it to the proper foot.
For sure. Well, you should tell Peter that, not me. It's tough right now for Sporting KC. If we were going to get back around to the soccer at any point.
Yeah, let's do that.
We said it wasn't tough because they have depth and they brought in pieces and they do have a USL team and they do have a fully fledged academy with talent, which they have already pulled up. So none of that's like saying that it should be easy for them to start fielding a team, but you can't go the entire first 3 months of the season without getting a result. So at some point, something has to happen. They have about a week and a half left in the transfer window. This isn't how Peter Vermees wants to work, but he has to look at this season. And
I almost think it's just triage at this point till the summer. It's just like, let's find a way.
Survive.
Let's get through.
That's how you get through it. It's going to be a bad short-term signing just to get yourself minutes from a player who can play.
But where do they need to do that?
Doesn't matter. Central midfield? Center back?
Why are they signing somebody?
Yeah, they got like bring over.
They don't have a training. They can't run a training.
Yes, they do. They got 20. However, they have enough players.
Is this good for Frank DeBoer and Atlanta United? They just got their first win at home. Sporting Kansas City, you would think, would have been a really big challenge for them. Two teams that just kind of like broad strokes.
No, I actually don't. By the way,
okay.
Because for Atlanta, they need teams to come out and try and play them. That's going to make life easier.
But
you don't think
Kansas City is going to do that? I mean, that is their identity. That is their core.
I don't know what Kansas City is going to do because, once again, they didn't run a training session this week, so they didn't practice anything.
Well, they missed one training session.
I'm kidding. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if this changes who the team that Peter Vermees built for 2019, because I agree. They were going to be the best possession team in the league. They were going to be one of the best teams maybe we'd ever seen based on the first 4 weeks of what we saw, and now it's a completely different group of people. And you don't have the same center backs to play out of the back. You don't have the same options in central midfield to cover ground like Espinosa to eat up acres of space wherein you open your team up. So at some point you will have to adjust if other people can't perform the same way.
Espinosa also, by the way, wasn't just like the bite and the tracking and the defensive work. He was, you know, we have second assists. He was like a specialist in third assists. He was like the guy who made the pass before the two passes that was an easy tap-in for Namath in this sense. Bobby, would you just go over the top some to Joseph Martinez, considering how the Revs did it at Kansas City? Like,
that's the conventional thought right now when you play SKC, for sure. You go behind them, you take advantage of their lack of pace, you take advantage of the fact that they naturally pull themselves out in possession, but my answer to that is no, Andrew. I think that Atlanta is still trying to be this possession team, and one thing Frank DeBoer knows, for as much as you like or dislike Frank DeBoer, is that it takes time, and you can't try something for 9 weeks and go away from it for 1 week and then come back to it, that it's a 34-game season, and you've got to continue to chip away at who you want to be and building the identity that you want to ingrain.
All right, that's the nightcap, the finale, Match Day Central right after it. It is on Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern on FS1, Sporting Kansas City, Atlanta United, our ESPN Plus game of the week. It is that time. Susanna, you are that person to kick us off.
I am. Oh, man. Minnesota, Seattle, the Ozzie Alonso game. No, I love it when there are matches like this and there's like a really like lovely kind of storyline there, because Ozzie spent so many years in Seattle. He's so beloved there. He was so good for them. And he spoke this week about it. He said, he's like, I'm going to have to work really hard at containing my emotions. And I think Aiko Parra said last week, he was like, this is for Ozzie. Like, yeah. This week is about Ozzie. And so I think just the opportunity too for like guys like Christian Roldan, who talked about Ozzie Alonso being a mentor to him and kind of
Roldan suspended.
No, he's not. I love storylines like this, and I think it's going to be an emotional day for both sides. So looking forward to that.
Bobby, ESPN Plus, what are you watching?
I'm going to take DC hosting the Columbus Crew, because the Columbus Crew only a few weeks ago were in first place in the East. We talked about them the same way we talked about Montreal and Philadelphia. But the one thing I think we missed about Columbus is that they weren't playing well. At least we noticed it, and we thought that it was them not playing well and finding ways to get points without playing well. And at some point, they would play well and get more points. But it was actually the other way, that they got lucky getting those points. And guys, I just think that the Crew are in a little bit of trouble right now. If you look at that team, they are not – it feels the same way that when Caleb Porter took over – Portland. He wanted to possess, or a little bit what Gio Savarese is going through with Portland. They wanted to possess, they wanted to play open, they wanted to be an attacking team, but can Jossie Zardes do that? Can Pedro Santos or Rubinho or 2019 Justin Miram do that? Probably not, and they have to rethink who they are, reinvent who they want to be a little bit in order to get back on track.
Toronto, thinking a little bit right now. I think that's your ESPN Plus game of the week, right?
Yeah, Toronto-Orlando. I think this game for Toronto will be a little bit cleaner, because Orlando will come out and play in transition a little bit. And I think that's moments where Pasuelo can find some success. And when you watch the way they played against Portland at home, right now without Jozy Altidore and without whatever TAM signing we believe they will make in the attack, which I think is completely necessary for them to make. It's not a luxury. They need one more player to take some of that creativity. But in Pozuelo's dangerous in those moments in transition, and he can set up the speed that they do have around him. And it'll be different than trying to break down a low block against Portland consistently, where they just didn't create chances.
Paul Tenorio, by the way, before I get to Paul, home game Orlando. Mm-hmm. Always watch that. And
yeah,
Toronto's
sure.
been super gappy too. Like, this one feels like it might be the highest scoring game of the weekend. It's, on that note, Paul Tenorio says that TFC are in negotiations with Omar Gonzalez.
Yeah, I think it's a good signing. It's an additional player who I would trust on that back line. It gives you flexibility because he could play in four or five in the back, but I still don't think that's the biggest necessity. I understand that the defense has been bad this year. Watching them the last 2 weeks, I haven't seen it. I still think they need one more attacking piece to take some of the pressure off Pozuelo and some of the reliance on Josie's health.
They need to get Josie back. No doubt about that one. Mine's going to be Colorado-Vancouver on Friday night. MLS Friday night on TSN, also ESPN Plus here in the U.S. Colorado, just to see how they respond. You know, it's been a big week. How do you respond? You need to get a win. This could be an opportunity. Vancouver is second to bottom in points per game. On the Vancouver side, man, MLS coaches are bringing some fire to the dais, because Mark Dos Santos came out and just straight up said it. Joaquin Ardaiz does not have good training habits. He needs to, quote, learn how to train. He went in on his habits as a professional soccer player day to day, and Ardaiz hasn't been getting minutes. They haven't really been scoring goals. I'm curious to see how Vancouver line up in this one on the road in Colorado. Let's go to the mailbag. 401-206-0MLS. Get out the black trash bag of swag for my guy Matt Martell, LA football column Matt Martell. 160 points.
Which LA team do you think he's a fan of?
I don't know. I don't know. We should probably, I think he's LAFC, so definitely pull a Galaxy kit right out of there. What do we got? What do we got? Seattle Sounders.
Born in 74.
Let's see who I'm oh, it's a double. So you have a Nico Lodero here and a Raul Ruiz Diaz.
Whoa.
TPK. Anders, producer Anders is pretty unhappy that we're giving this away. He tried to take it from us, and we would not allow it. So, of course, if you want to win a signed jersey and perhaps, you know, go home with one of these bad boys, join our fantasy league, you can do it at any time. It's just whoever has the most points week to week. So you don't have to play all season long to be a winner for our league here. What do you
have? You guys are all already winners because you're listening and watching Extra Time Radio. Eric in Fort Worth, who's an ETR legend, he called it the Texas Derby. So there you go.
Okay.
He said, here's a question that's been on my mind, though, since the Dynamo have been playing well. It largely runs through their attack through two of the three forwards, and I'm curious how you rate them. Are Elise and Minotas among the best forward pairing in MLS?
Yes. Yes. I'm trying to think of right now, off the top of my head, one that I would put above it.
Well, if you're calling a front three a pairing, because that's kind of what he's doing, then LAFC's in there because they have Vela obviously. And Rossi.
Yeah, and I think if you want to, you could even throw in at times when Dio's on form and he's scoring like two goals a game, he could be in that conversation. There was a time when Atlanta would have been your number one. Miguelito. And Joseph, I still think that, you know, name-wise, maybe not production-wise yet, they're probably in that category. Pozuelo and Josie, if you count Pozuelo, but he's more of a midfielder, so probably not.
Okay.
Where's Acosta and Rooney into this at this point?
Oh, yeah.
Would Namath and, like, a Johnny Russell went on form be, but I don't think so. Not, I don't think with Mauro Minotas and Albert Feliz. You don't gotta laugh at me. Be nice, Bobby. other than that, I mean, so, Zlatan and they don't really have a second one.
Well, Alessandrini's hurt.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Darwin and Angelo. Angela?
To be honest, though, getting up there. Like, climbing fast.
Yeah, but it's almost like they're not a combo. It's almost like they're separate pieces. Anyway, continue. I want to get to the Roldan stuff before we get out of here.
We have a lot of Roldan stuff. I'll take this one to start with Luke from Seattle. So on Monday, Matt Doyle said that he agreed with the call because he wanted consistency with hands to face. Luke agrees with Doyle. He said 100% agree with Doyle. Any hands to the face is immediate red card. If someone dives in for a header and their face grazes your hand, you deserve a red card. If you touch your own face, you deserve a red card. If the reincarnation of Blas Perez grabs your hand and repeatedly hits himself in the face with it and then rolls around for 20 minutes crying, you deserve a red card.
I agree with that last part.
What about a soft beard massage?
Yeah, what about a caress? Yes, a caress.
And if someone shoves you from your blind side, causing you to throw your arms up to regain balance and you happen to graze the cheeks of the guy that shoved you, you deserve a red card. No situation is too ridiculous to excuse hand to face. I think he may have been being sarcastic.
So the independent review panel, which is a, it's U.S. soccer and from Canadian soccer as well. And then I think Pro has an unbiased, unconnected person they nominate to this. Has to be unanimous. They have to all say that should not be a red card. They did. Christian Roldan is now available to play and bro hug Ozzy on the field in Minnesota.
Yes.
So, yeah, no, look, I didn't think it would happen. Bobby, did you think it would happen? We both agreed that it shouldn't have been a red card. But I just didn't think it would happen because, like, hands to face, how do you measure intent? But clearly,
yeah, so Josh, by the way, Joshua from Hennessy, Oklahoma, basically made it a handball situation where he's like, you don't want to see a spot where a ref has to decide hand to face or face to hand.
Yeah.
So he's saying a hand touches a face, and now why are you going to start getting into judging intent?
Mm.
And that's what Doyle was saying, and that the way it has been written, and we do have the written rules if you want to read that, but I know you're a big IR guy.
Yeah, no.
And you could go there to watch it. Then why start getting into like what he meant and why he meant it and how the force was?
Gotcha. You sneak up on Cameron and I at Red Bull Arena, it's definitely face to hand.
You're going to get these hands.
Yeah.
That's what Andrew Weeby's been telling you.
Anything else here?
Yeah, I thought this one was interesting. It's from an unknown. Oh, first of all, Tom agrees with you. He said, enough with the FC Cincinnati has USL players. They have seven USL players that started in 10 games. They've played six of the seven, were either the USL MVP from last year or the USL Defender of the Year. The talent is enough. So Tom agreed with you. But the last one was, is there any center back in the league with a better recovery tackle than Austin Trusty?
That's really interesting you point that out because I actually watched that game with Kelsey, and Kelsey isn't a soccer person, but she noted that like four times. She was like, oh my God, that guy has had the best tackles of the game. And it's true. He's very good at it. But I thought it was interesting that.
Who else would we put in that category?
Who else would you put up there?
I think Walker Zimmerman has a knack for emergency defense. I think also Aiko Parra has that knack, and it's a pretty valuable knack for Minnesota United. Mm.
I'd put Aaron Long in there as well.
Aaron Long's got that too. And we talked about that so much last year, like being basically the free safety behind.
And Kendall Waston. Because Kendall Waston, when you beat him, he has an ability to use his body to kind of like get you off because he's taller and bigger than you while being faster than you. And I think he's one of the best at that.
All right. 401-206-0MLS. Text us, please. Email us at extratime@mlssoccer.com. Join the fantasy league. Big thanks.
Are you jealous,
to
Anders?
Porig,
are you jealous?
Smith, the general manager of the Colorado Rapids, for joining us today to talk about Anthony Hudson, his dismissal, and what the future looks like. Big thanks to you guys, Susanna Collins, David Goss, Bobby Warshaw. I'm Andrew Wiebe. We will see you on Monday, everybody. We'll be right back.